After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Hey everyone, it's Raghu and I'm back with Mind Rolling with the original Mind Roller, David Silber. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Still rolling.
Still rolling, yeah. And this is another episode in our series, Just Ask the Experts. Here we are. Yeah. Okay, and today the expertise is the yugas. Okay, everyone kind of knows the woo-hoo thing of Kali Yuga. We're in the Kali Yuga. Look at all this bad shit that's going on, which is a wild understatement. But actually, there's a much more complex and multifaceted, understanding of what the yugas are. David, everybody, he suggested this book, and I thought, okay, because I'm all, you know, the yugas, and what are we talking about, 200,000 years here, 200, you know, it's a little bit beyond my intellectual scope, but this book had some things in it that were, they were really attuned and felt completely right on. I mean, talking about understanding our hidden past, the emerging energy age, an enlightened future. Just that word alone gives you a little bit of hope. But I think we need to start, Dave, by what exactly do we mean by a yuga?
Well, there are many versions of this, which is, makes it more complicated than it already is. But the version I got attracted to was that of Sri Yukteswar Giri, who was Yogananda's guru. And I read the book called The Holy Science. I just found it when it came out in 1972. And that's where his definition cosmologically of the yugas is in there, what Yukteswar taught. And it's very different from a lot of the other ones, so what can I say? But what it is a system derived from many thousands of years ago, either before the Vedas or somehow hidden in the Vedas. That's a little bit of a thing that people don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's based on a concept of there being a way in which the cosmos works, the whole cosmos, that brings about changes in, not just changes in like obvious things like ecology or technical prowess or no, but changes in consciousness. That, in other words, the yuga doesn't change until the consciousness is changing, or the other way around, too. So what I was thinking before we did this podcast, before we connected, was, well, you know, the whole thing has got a poetic value, apart from anything else. And I mean poetry on the highest level, you know, which tries to explain why we are the way we are. And when Raga and I discussed doing this, we both felt that it was timely to have some kind of perspective on the craziness of the world right now. This is, what, October 22nd, 2023, and there are all kinds of horrors going on in the wars. Now, it's not to say that there haven't been wars forever, and there hasn't been oppression forever, and is it any worse, any better? We can't argue that, but it seems because of media that we know much more about what is taking place, even if it is filtered through the media capitalist system. And I thought, the yugas, even as I say poetically or metaphorically, give us an answer, because what they say is that there are four yugas. Let's get down to what they are. There are four yugas.
And yuga would be a span of time.
A span of time, yeah. And there's great argument and controversy, as you can imagine, about this. And he has his own exact thing, which is that a whole set of yugas, all four of them, takes 24,000 years. And the yugas that exist, the four yugas that exist in there, are of different lengths. At the very top, shall we say, of consciousness and of the circle, and Raga will publish, I hope, on the website.
Yeah, I will.
Picture I sent to you. You should look at that picture even before you look at the, listen to this. Because the way it is, it's like a circle, and it's in four quadrants, but they're not equal in size. The first one at the top, there are two sets, two halves. First one is descending yugas, and the second half is ascending yugas. Right now, we're in the beginning of the Dwapara Yuga, which comes after the Kali Yuga. In terms of the order of events in the circle, the top part is Satya Yuga, which is that of pure consciousness, divine consciousness.
How about if I show this page?
Yeah, you show it like that. Yeah. And so that one at the top, Satya, and this is descending half, if you're looking at this. Satya is the first one. Treta is the second one. Dwapara is the third one, and Kali Yuga, the most famous one, is at the bottom. And then you see they turn. And then this is the second half of Kali going up to Dwapara, to Treta, to Satya. So there's a half going down and a half going up. We're at the end of the descending one, according to Yukteswar. And what we are, this particular Kali Yuga, according to him, ended in the year 1900. Our year, just, you know, 150 years ago, 130 years ago. And that's when it ended. And then the Dwapara starts, which is a much higher consciousness. As they go to each other in the ascending, they get higher. The Kali Yuga is known as the Yuga when mankind can only perceive of gross matter and objectifies all reality. And therefore, a dualistic approach at best causes people to be treated like objects, because the whole perceptive process, the construct in that yuga which we've just left, you could say, well, 1900, it ended in 1900, the Kali Yuga, but what about the First World War, Hitler, Mussolini, fascism, the Cold War, nuclear weapon? Well, there's something called a sandhi, S-A-N-D-H-I, a sandhi. And the sandhi is the overlap between two yugas. And it depends on the size of the yuga, how long the sandhi is. It's proportional. So there's a sandhi of at least 200 years in Yukteswar's vision, which means that we're right at the beginning of the ascending and getting rid of the descending. But in this time occurs tremendous arguments. I mean, arguments about reality, arguments about religion, arguments about sex, gender, all that happens. All of it's good. But some of it is bad because it's held by people who are stuck in the Kali Yuga. Yukteswar says that both the person stuck in the Kali Yuga will be stuck in any yuga if he or she doesn't grow. On the converse, which is more positive, in the Kali Yuga, even in the lowest chakra yuga, there are many people who are living in the Satya Yuga. It just works like that. They come back. And the bodhisattva concept, the Buddhist bodhisattva concept, is that you can release yourself into the all, but you come back as an individuated being to help others who are struggling in their yuga. So the sandhi is now. So what we're experiencing, Raghav, now is the Israel-Hamas war and the Ukraine-Russia war and potential for real problems in China. So how does it help us? Basically, a great yogi or an avatar even can exist in the Kali Yuga, and did, and has, many that we know of. And so, in the same sense, the bad and the good can be in any yuga. But for me, the yuga, and I wrote this down, is a quote from the book. It says, each yuga changes the consciousness of mankind. However, the cycle of the yugas is bound together with the development of everyone's consciousness.
Right. So it's got to be an interactive thing. Yeah. It can't just be someone on high is saying, okay, new yuga, so new consciousness. Okay. It's all an interactive. No. We should say people don't know who Sri Yukteswar is.
Well, I mentioned that he was Yogananda's
guru. Yogananda's guru. But I think further than that, his guru was Lahiri Mahasaya, a great saint in India. I haven't read Yogananda's book in a long, long time, but I would believe that all of them are under that one banner of Babaji, which this Babaji in particular is known in India of the deathless manifestation of a human in a body. This is still up in the Himalaya. And actually gives his darshan or makes people aware of his presence to this day, and so you can't just dismiss it. I think that's what I'm trying to say. You cannot just dismiss that Yukteswar had this whole thing around the science of the different ages. That you can just dismiss. Although David just told me before we got on, I just read this article. It completely makes it totally absurd about anything like this.
which goes
along with our, you know, our thing, which...
you should explain that. It's a whole different language that they're using to describe it. And in their sense, a year is not a human year. It's a Brahman year and a Brahma year. A Brahma year being thousands of years of our life, and that Yukteswar has been misinterpreted, basically. But that's nonsense, because he specifically mentions dates. Like, for instance, okay, Satya Yuga started, let's get back to this, 11,500 BC. That's before we are here now. It started 11,500 years ago and lasted till 6,700 BC. Then the Treta Yuga started at 6,700, lasted to 3,100 BC. It's still 3,000 years before Jesus Christ. The Dwapara Yuga started 3,100 BC and lasted to 700 BC. We're still before the Roman Empire and Jesus Christ. The Kali Yuga started in 700 BC. And just as it sort of started, 300 years later, you had the Roman invasion of Palestine and the murder of Christ. And it ended in 1900 AD, just 20, 30 years away from the Nazi vision of cruelty and oppression. So basically, those are the numbers. As you can see, we're right at the end of the Kali Yuga. And what I feel about this is that even though in the book, the authors of this book, and we should mention them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Joseph, well, we'll put it in the
show notes, yeah.
Joseph Selby and David Steinmetz. And, you know, the reason I know about any of this was because of our friend Dina Merriam, who is a great follower of Yogananda. And she sent me this book.
Uh-huh.
And I should mention that she's the head of something called the Global Peace Initiative of Women. And she travels the world making sure there's some consciousness about helping women in various cultures that are they're not being helped. Mm-hmm. Very courageous woman. Anyway, she sent me this book. And because she has been thinking about this since 1972 when she became aware of Yogananda, Yukteswar, Lahiri, Babaji. But I've always loved them. But I didn't know this particular part of the cosmic consciousness, because I never knew that these guys like Yukteswar were cosmologists and astrologists too. Deeply detailed stuff. The astrology that came out of, you know, in Sanskrit, no less, was just the earliest version of anything that was articulated about it in any real way. And the yugas come from that information via those great gurus.
Yeah.
So it's not Jimmy Fallon telling me this. Not that anything against Jimmy Fallon, but it's not. It's Sri Yukteswar, you know. So basically, to get back to the whole thing, it's all about consciousness.
Yeah. But the other thing that we talked about is that the reality you could do the whole woo-hoo thing on this, you know, and Sri Yukteswar, and he was interested in astronomy, and, you know, there's a lot of substantial information. You could woo-hoo the whole thing if you want.
Yeah.
Or you could.
The people who listen to your great podcast, aren't they already sort of, obviously, they're
no,
not.
I woo-hooed it, okay? I mean, it's all real, but, you know, of course I know that. But on the other hand, I never had any kind of understanding whatsoever based on this particular book. It was just phenomenal. Yeah. But here's the thing that makes it, okay, you can't quite just throw it off. Every major mystical tradition, you know, to Native Americans, to Sufis, and so on, they all have something that just mirrors what you know we're talking about here. These yugas, is that correct?
Yeah, and this is the way this works, exactly, Raghu. It's like, okay, when we're growing up in England, anyway, we were taught about the four stages of ages of man: iron, bronze, silver, golden, right? And then the bull of Dharma, which is part of the Hindu tradition, Vedic, says that the bull has four legs, stands on four legs in the Satya Yuga, the highest yuga, and going down by the time it gets to the Kali Yuga is trying to stand on one leg. Okay. The Sioux, Lakota Sioux white buffalo vision is of a bull who in their worst times can only stand on one leg. And as it grows to the highest point that, that those Native Americans aspired to at that time, it can stand on all four legs. That's a pretty astounding thing, you know. And I mean, I remember Joseph Campbell saying one time that people who think that God is, you know, some sort of judgmental creature living in an antiseptic part of the universe, this is just a nonsensical way of looking at how to get the divine magnetism. It just won't work for you. You'll just feel oppressed your whole life. And so we need these various conduits. If it's Christ, fine. If it's Krishna, fine. But what Campbell was really saying is that, you know, they're all exactly the same, and he called them dialects of the divine language. In other words, you know, a Lakota Sioux talking and some being in India 7,000 years ago talking are both talking about a bull that can only stand on one leg when we're in the darkest part of our consciousness. Now, as I said at the beginning of this, if you think of this only as poetry, it works. That's how I'm thinking of it, more because I can't say, well, I totally believe this is exactly 24,000 years. I don't know that. Raghu knows.
Yeah. This is ask the experts. The byline is they know nothing.
Right. No, but meaning faith. You know, our friend K.K. Shah used to say to me all the time, and to many other people, you know, faith is the only thing, the only backstop, really. It's not the word he used, but you have to have some sort of faith in this, because you've been saying in the podcast that people, you know, woo-hoo it and go, come on, guys, get real. But we're trying to be real by trying to understand why. Do you think it's normal that, you know, rockets are going off right now? Huge, big rockets with explosions and hitting cities. How real is that? And very real in our yuga and in our plane of consciousness. It's still part of the dream of Maya. So
hey, one thing, though, that really struck me, it was particularly apparently the reality at the pinnacle of higher consciousness in any one of these yuga, incredible profundity of discovery happened. And then it got lost. And then it came back. And they point to the amazing, of course, pyramids in Egypt. And there's no possibility that there was nothing at that time that would indicate that people could actually do a piece of architecture like this with all that's entailed. Nobody knows how it happened, right? And that starts to speak to this in a way that's not so rational. Okay, well, how did that happen? And then that's lost, and then something else comes back, which expresses, look where we are in the last, 150 years. The amazing discoveries that have gone on. And so he points to that in the book. I found that really substantial in terms of it starts to fit into what Yukteswar is talking about.
Yeah. He makes it quite clear in the book that the historical analysis of reality is so shallow and almost not important. It's about great warriors and kings. But he says that, in terms of the yugas, much of what Raghu just mentioned, the buildings, how did they build them? These writings, how did they write them? What about the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Mahabharata? On and on and on. People tend, he says in the book, because of our scientific, rationalistic, Descartes-based cogito ergo sum mindset, we automatically feel that if it's about spiritual stuff or religious stuff, and it's way back then, he calls it surreptitious and incorrect idea of primitivism. That we constantly are thinking that those people knew nothing. They were dumb. They didn't have toilets. Right. They didn't have television. They didn't have clothes. And he's saying that's just a wrong view. It's linear. People went through various stages of evolution. But to say that this is the first time that this has happened doesn't conform with the yugas. The yugas say that it constantly recycles and that we have hope in our hearts that our consciousness can recycle in the same way, so that we have dark parts of ourselves. We remember things we did. We regret. We may have grown, better people, become better. All these things within our own yuga, set of yugas. Because they say that in the yuga too. They say it. Human beings have these four yugas in them and transcend them the best way they can to reach their own satya yuga.
Yeah, right.
In meditation, usually.
Yeah. This is a great point. I mean, the reality, this is what's inside is outside and vice versa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
I just wanted to read this little thing from that gives some other pretty wild viewpoints. Sri Yukteswar explains that the cycle of the yugas is caused by influencers, right? And from outside our solar system. What does that mean? Influencers outside of our solar system that affect the consciousness of all mankind. And mankind's consciousness changes as a result of this influence. So also does mankind's perception, awareness, and intellect. In the higher ages that Sri Yukteswar describes, mankind not only knows more, but is able to perceive more than we do today. Mankind as a whole not only has more advanced capabilities, but becomes motivated profoundly differently as the ages unfold. In the higher ages described by Sri Yukteswar, perceptions and abilities considered highly unusual today will be as normal to everyone alive at that time as cars, planes, and telephones are to us today. That's pretty amazing.
It's beautiful because he's saying there is a progression. It goes through darkness and weirdness, but it comes out because there needs to be growth and evolution of all beings within this one. That's such an amazing thing. I missed that somehow when I read the book, I think.
I love that. That's a beautiful piece. Yeah.
Yes.
It further supports, again, the substantiality of who we're talking about here, Sri Yukteswar.
Yes.
Where all of this is derived, and not just he, but also, of course, Yogananda, and who was seminal in turning on us in the West to Eastern mysticism. So, but who is the influencers? That's a good question. And well, you know what? Here's what I feel, and this could be more sort of pedestrian naivete, which I'm sure it is, but I feel like we met this being, Neem Karoli Baba, in India back in that time. And many people were influenced is not even, it's a wild understatement by this being, but by this experience. So how is, he's an influencer. You know, you talk about, yeah, he's an Instagram influencer. Well, here's like a, you know, a major change of direction that happened for so many people back in that day. And the outcome has been profound, Ram Dass being the best example of that, but there are many people. And where does that influencer comes from? It comes from, you know, to me, all of this, it's the interaction of our actions with our potential wise consciousness, shall we say, is integral as to how these lapse of how this time and space that is characterized by each of these yugas, how it develops and how it actually manifests. And so I would say that Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji, you could easily put him into this equation as an influencer coming from the one, which we have no, the mystery, we have no idea. Anyhow, that's my...
No, I think you're absolutely right, because you, when you encountered him, he gave you something you didn't have and you might never have had. And there he is right there. Now, what is he? Well, we can't define that, but it's from some other place of consciousness within the one. And you might as well say it's from outer space, because there's no distance in that dimension. It's not about distance, time, space, linear. It's about all of it happening all at the same time. And yet we can only be conscious of what we're ready to be conscious of. And I mean, that's what, I mean, my goodness, Yuktisvara, as you've been saying, and it's so right to say it, and that lineage of Self-Realization Fellowship people, it was remarkable beyond words, because they came west. And Yuktisvara says that the ones that come in the Kali Yuga is the most invitable, most precious ones to those that want to have devotional change made with other human beings. And in other words, they come to the Kali Yuga. They're way deep into the Kali Yuga, because you know from your studies that, you know, just on the, in the Indian mode of it, not thinking about Chinese or any other, just in, it goes back forever that these people existed, but it's all, as far as we're concerned, in the Kali Yuga, because they're the only ones we would know about. We're all in the Kali Yuga, right? Mm. None of them were in, shall we say, the Satya Yuga, but what Yuktisvara says, it doesn't matter. They're in the Satya Yuga all the time. Get it. They can't go out of the Satya Yuga. They are the Satya Yuga. But they come back, as I said, with the Bodhisattva motivation, which is within the Kali Yuga. People are so densely, they're just objectifying all of reality, and therefore greed and wealth and lying and various forms of violation of the beauty of being human come forth. And then these people appear by just fiat, by just fiat. That you can't explain it, you shouldn't try. But God knows, when you come across their wisdoms, I never met Yuktisvara, but when I, you know, when I picked up this little book yesterday that I'd lost, for, I couldn't find it, this one, The Holy Science by him. It's just a little book. Okay, so the book's, it's only 60 pages, and there's just lots of little chapters, you know, full of Vedic wisdom, full of Shakti that jump off the page. But each one of them, underneath in italics, has got a quotation from the Christian and Judeo-Christian Bible. There it is, underneath, an exact parallel between what he's saying coming from where he is. And he's looking at this, and he says in some other introduction, my aim in coming here was to be with people of every single faith. And that because he wrote the Yugas thing doesn't mean that he actually separated anything out. The Yugas would prove to him that we're all being one all the time. We're not bits of the one. We're fractals of the one. I just realized this a few days ago, actually. We're fractals of the one. We are the one, and we're fractals. We're like a laser beam, but we are the one. So the yugas, what does it come down to? It comes down to the fact that it's very possible, isn't it, Raga, that people who lived in that time who were not distracted by anything except either devotion or serfdom. You know, they were living very primitive lives, or they were as much a master as the ones from the 19th and 20th centuries. Mm. We can assume that. We think about Babaji and so on. So at that time, they came, and that was in the Kali Yuga, because according to Teswar, we are still there, just about leaving and so on. So it means that they come because they see the greatest dangers in darkness. You know, the Chinese called one era the turbulent era of utter darkness. And that was what that was their Kali Yuga, their explanation of the Kali Yuga. Mm. It's a time when only darkness prevails, and therefore those that carry light will want to go into that darkness to bring further light.
So another...
Just saying, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But you talked a little bit ago about the reality that other traditions absolutely have a myth about this reality. And one thing I just wanted to mention, because I've always felt so close to their worldview perspective, the Hopi, and I know you do too. The yes. Hopi of the American Southwest speak of four worlds. Frank Waters, himself a Hopi, describes them in the Book of the Hopi, which is a great book. In the first world, the people were pure, happy, healthy, Satyuga. The people, I'm obviously comparing. The people felt one with one another and with nature. They felt at one with one another and with nature. By the third world, people lived in big cities and there was corruption and war. And in the fourth world, people lived in a hard world marked by duality, polarity, you could use that word too, and quote unquote, heat and cold, beauty and barrenness. Mm. Mm. That seems to be right on description for where we are right now. I mean, pretty amazing.
And where yeah. we've been for a long time, because, you know, if you just look at the bare bones of the last 5,000 years or something, which is just the tip of the iceberg, it's been a lot of aggro, to say the least. I mean, people being treated badly, and slavery being a way of life, and war being a way of life also. And maybe, you know, this is reaching a peak now, and therefore it will, you know, either get worse, or people will suddenly come to their senses and start, you know, trying to avoid what's happening in the Middle East, you know, yeah. which is the constant cultivation of division and separation. It can't work. It's not working for either side in Israel and the Palestinians. So they better come up with something quicker. It's going to be
Talk
so devastating.
Bad, Jesus. And you mentioned to me, yeah, well, horrible. In Roman times, they used to bring the slaves into a stadium and kill them, like 10,000. You said to me, yeah, 10,000.
Yeah. Emperor Trajan. He was one of those like Nero and like Tiberius and Caligula yeah. who were perverted psychopaths.
But it said 10,000. You were right in one day.
Yeah, 10,000 in a day.
Before a cheering crowd. Mm. I mean, holy, this is
so
humanity.
We've progressed. I mean, now we cheer for sports teams. And on the whole, that's fairly safe for people. So that's good. I mean... No, it is good. I mean, there are certain things that in the better part of this, remember, we're in the ascending part of the Dwapara, just beyond the ascending Kali Yuga, according to the diagram. And therefore, I saw a thing on the BBC a couple of weeks ago, which blew my mind, talk about yugas. Mm. It was a gentleman, a scientist, and an engineer who spoke about the fact that the most obsolete thing that we have, that we don't need to have, are things like wires and outlets and anything involving electricity being transmitted via wires or material objects. On further questioning, he said, yes, we should be able to do some of these things. And he had something that levitated on a table. Mm. It just did. He told it to and it did. And his vision was, where this technology that we think is so amazing, and in some ways it is nothing compared with the use of thought. And the Treta Yuga is known as the Yuga of thought. You know, when we go to that level of understanding, we can control our environment with no machinery or middlemen in between. And this British scientist, who was very credible and really was a scientist, not a woo-hoo-ster, you know, he was saying, oh, yeah, the next stage is intense holography and three-dimensional creations, and then the movement of objects without water or electricity or anything. We're just going to be able to. And it was amazing to see, you know, and then it was back to, thank you very much, Joseph Friedkin, and now back to the Middle East. And I thought, wait a minute. He just said something astounding, which was that we're in a very primitive state of this technology, and it won't be long before we're able to do things with our mind.
Well, it's in the book, right?
It's in the book, yeah.
Yeah, consider the thought awareness intuitive attunement on any human endeavor we can envision, a Treta Yuga society filled with extraordinarily capable people. But intuitive attunement to a particular realm of thought leads not only to great accomplishments, but can lead to great power as well. As a person becomes intuitively attuned to thought, he or she will be able to direct thought and as a result manipulate energy and matter by affecting the very thought forms that give rise to them. Here, we truly part company with the world with which we are now familiar. Well, wait a minute. You know, look at, you know, AI. We're starting to give AI that power, right?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, it can be used for total good. I mean, it can design a dam, a plane, a thing that people use that will never, you know, be disabled or cause a disaster. It can do things now because it can enter the role, you know, of digital interpretation better than we can. But then, as we all know, it can destroy us. And when you think of the people who, I mean, I don't want to get into an Elon Musk thing here. I'll just tell you this. I saw a 10-minute video that he made. Elon made, of how it's possible to send spaceships to very distant places. And in this thing, his description and analysis and interpretation of this was absolutely remarkable. In other words, the man is not a fool. He may be a dark character. He may be, I don't know. I don't know him. I know some of the things he says make me really nervous. But what I was amazed about was how advanced his brain is on this stuff. Because he wasn't talking to, you know, he wasn't saying, oh, talk to my chief engineer. He had this thing right in front of him and going, okay, watch this ellipse and watch how it changes. And look what I have to do to get that thing to land on Neptune rather than just to go around it. It can be done easily, but we have to know how this is all spinning. And I watched it with as much interest as I would ever watch anything. I realized I was watching Elon Musk.
Wow.
He did not appear to be a lunatic, you know, but this is part of the problem of the Kali Yuga, I guess, according to the sages, the rishis, which is that, you know, within the abilities that we have, some people have supremely advanced abilities, but very, very little spiritual or
moral,
loving kindness vibes. So you have someone who can be really, because the tendency is to think that people who are doing these bad things are just stupid or ignorant or vicious or cruel. They may be, but that some of them are really cunning and extremely smart. So that's part of the progression of the yugas, where all people are in every yuga, really. No matter which way you put it, it's all one, right? Raghu, say something else about this. I have, like, you know, so many notes here, but, you know.
Well, no, there was a number of, a lot of things that caught my interest, you know, that, again, deepened my understanding, for sure, of what they were trying to get across here, and got me out of my, oh yeah, that's more woohoo yoga thing. How's that going to help anything in the moment? And then started to find lots of different ideas, concepts, and presentations of this process that Sri Yukteswar enabled through that book, I guess, you know, for people to really think about this. So here's another one. And this is from Yogananda. This is a facet of Treta Yuga. It's difficult to comprehend, for us to comprehend, is that in the Treta Yuga, mankind will overcome the limitations of time by developing, quote unquote, time annihilators. What the hell is that? One of the limitations of time that we accept today is that, quote unquote, it takes time for certain things to happen. Plants grow at a certain pace. Healing requires time to happen. Children need a lengthy childhood to grow up. People need time to learn. In Treta Yuga, it may be that many processes we now believe absolutely will take time could be sped up or even eliminated by the agency of thought. This is all really, every time I read something like this, this AI thing, because, you know, we're using it now and it's extraordinary in the simplest, most direct way, you know, hey, please summarize this or write a letter that or whatever, you know, just extremely expedient kind of uses. But it's still, you're like woken up in a way that's quite different. The way that reading this is sort of okay, yeah, because we know the power of thought. I mean, Yogananda went to see Luther Burbank, who was growing shit, you know, in lab, and he started talking to his cactus plant that had, you know, spikes like all cactus do, lovingly, and love you, and wow, we're friends. The sharp spines disappeared. He came up with a cactus that didn't have that by virtue. I mean, this is, of course, his premise. But this stuff is real. We all know how powerful our minds can be. And, you know, when we want to manipulate ourselves into either rejecting pain or looking for pleasure. And our minds are pretty powerful. And I've seen it, of course, with Neem Karoli Baba, who just without doing, saying, or anything, people like David and I did this wonderful film Brilliant Disguise, it's called. Here's a little commercial, Dave. Brilliant Disguise, the Samadhi of K.C. Tiwari. Well, Maharaji, as we called him, used to look at Tiwari, and he would go into the deepest of absorptions beyond breath and pulse, because we were told, hey, check him out. Does he have any? Maharaji was playing with us. Anyhow, the power of that is undeniable. And we've all experienced it, I think. And, you know, that's obviously a huge magnification of what that is. But this stuff in the Treta Yuga, the possibilities there, and the way we're moving, you know, right now around this particular idea is quite amazing.
You know, it makes me think of the fact that in the book he talks about Einstein and Tesla and mentions that Einstein's, you know, E equals MC squared came out 5 years into the end of the Kali Yuga, and that Tesla's totally visionary way of looking at electricity and life in general was also, you know, 10, 15 years after that. Both of those men had spiritual grasp of engineering, and et cetera. In other words, if you read these quotes, they're often online, that Einstein's, most of the quotes from Einstein were about, no, they weren't about numbers, they weren't about formulae, they weren't about scientific, they were just about love, kindness, and belief that the truth exists. So in the book here, in this book by, you know, these guys, they talk about that. Well, Tesla just thought his way through these problems that no one else knew was a problem. One of them being alternating current and direct current. The difference between those two things. No one on Earth, in our yuga at any rate, seems, knew about that. In the book, the authors say, it's not that Einstein and Tesla were so different. They just perceived things that other people didn't perceive. The word genius is kind of misused for them, he believes. In other words, it could have been anybody, but they somehow were tuned into stuff. You know, there's a very funny story about Tesla that I love. Tesla had a studio lab down in the West Village in New York, and he invented a tablet, a large thing, large tablet to stand on, which would bring about advanced thought. And he tried it on himself. It vibrated. If you can imagine, this was like in 1918 or something. And it vibrated and it made you feel good, body, mind. So he managed to get in touch with, I think he knew him a little bit, with Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain. And he invited Twain, who was in the area, to come and stand on the tablet, the vibrating tablet, and then to ask him, what are the effects of that? So Twain, Clemens, stood on it for the requisite 8 minutes or something, and then got off, and Tesla asked him, so, how do you feel? He said, I feel nothing. I absolutely feel nothing. I'm sorry. And Tesla went, wait, I've done this. How could you feel nothing? It must have affected you. Sorry, it didn't. And then he went out. But before he left, he said to Nikola Tesla, can I just use your bathroom? And Tesla said, yeah, go, please, it's over there on the right. And Clemens went in there and then came out sort of 3 minutes later and said, my God, I've been constipated for so long. It just all came out. <That's good. laughs> You know, I studied Tesla for a long time.
So really? That's good.
Yeah,
use.
I did. I wrote a musical called Tesla in my life. I've done strange things. And that was one of the... Well, Tesla was one... The reason I bring it up is not so much to make jokes, but he says that Tesla and Einstein were just receptacles before their time, but not really, because they were just hearing things from a previous Satya or Treta Yuga. You know, backwards and forwards in time, you can go and suddenly people are visionaries. So Tesla was seeing things. No one else in our time was thinking like Nikola Tesla. Mm. And you could say, well, that was just, he was a genius. But what the hell does that mean? It means that he was receiving information that other people were not, and therefore could come up with a brand new vision of the cosmos.
Yeah. Now, when we kind of say, well, who cares? Why bother? You know, that we might get that. Might in ourselves go, what are we bothering about?
Yes.
Well, obviously, just the general concept of a bigger picture, shall we say, rather than our one little lifetime, in relation to the ebbing and flowing and of even within our lifetime, we have had an ebb and flow of different cycles. We all have, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. some of it's natural, baby, child, young adult, and so on. But I found something here that I think really gives us an idea of why it is something that can give us, push our consciousness a little bit, which is important, because we all get stuck in, we know what it is, know-it-all-ism. That's why Bernie Glassman, right, that great Roshi, he was all about, let's see, let's see. We don't know anything, let's see. You know,
I mean.
Let me read this, Dave.
Okay.
Because then it takes us to a good place. What is Yukteswar observed that God's not, it's not a venerable person adorning a throne in some antiseptic corner of the universe. It's pure consciousness, beyond form and limitation, and our own consciousness, our very being, is an inextricable expression of this consciousness. Thus, the more deeply we understand ourselves, the more deeply we understand our consciousness as part of the pure consciousness of God. That's a great couple of lines right there. But here's the reason why, in that this book responds to, these particular lines respond to exactly. One can describe the development of mankind through the yugas as the process of discovering deeper, more subtle aspects of the reality of who they have been all along. Again, the inner and the outer. It's not just something outside ourselves that we are trying to learn about. Advancing through the yugas is like removing layers of wrappings from a package, layers that are hiding the gift within. By Satya Yuga, most of the wrappings will have been removed, and the gift within will be visible, as though seen through one final, faintly obscuring layer of tissue. In Satya Yuga, each individual will still need to remove that final layer, but he will also know that once he has done so, he will experience, quote-unquote, God, the Spirit, beyond this visible world. Pretty good.
It's great. It's one of those things that if it works for you, this particular wisdom or knowledge, whatever you want, body of knowledge, if it works for you, then it works for you, just like it did for me, and it seems to have done for you for a little bit. It's not for everyone, because it's not the necessary remedy to some people's suffering.
Day-to-day,
chaotic
life.
Any kind of privileged life one is lucky enough to have, or so on, you have time to think about this stuff and everything. But what you just said, what you just quoted, it makes this more than just an obscure thing that you don't have to study the yugas to just know that there's some kind of vision of the process of going to God. And that in this case, it's cosmic. But in the body and mind and soul we live in, it's personal. So I've been thinking a lot about this. I do a lot of walking these days. I meditate kind of by walking. And just thinking of the number of things that I can remember being involved with in my life that now I would never be involved with. That now what changed me? And I mean, not bad stuff, but stuff that was just a waste of time or waste of energy or not quite observing someone else's realness and humanity. And then when you get older, you sort of see this. What changed you? What actually changed you in your own personal set of yugas? And how do you go from, seeing people as the other to seeing everyone as being one? There are changes in an individual life. And that if this is a metaphor that helped me, just sort of see, okay, I can see why there is darkness in the world. One of the things I would say about this is that the mystical religions, even Judaism, we'll talk about reincarnation, and obviously it's a very major part of much of Eastern spirituality. If you couple the yugas with the dynamic of reincarnation, you can see redemption for the change from this incarnation, this sheath, to another one, and progress in that way. In other words, if someone goes, well, that's all very well, but I'm not going to be around for the Treta Yuga. I'm not even going to be around for like April. What are you talking about? I guess you're saying, look, if these great beings like Maharaji, Ninkarolia, and others felt the need to come back, and it says in the book that the Kali Yuga is the best time for devotional spirituality. Yukteswar even says it's kirtan that is the most propitious way.
Yeah,
to reach it, which is very
mantra
interesting.
Too.
Mantra, right. Read the Rig Veda. It's all mantras, 1,000 mantras, right? So, yeah, but that's cool and it's great and everything. But if you just can imagine this construct, the yuga construct, with the construct of transmigration of souls based upon karma, then you've put the two together, and there's hope and light and life and love within that, I think.
Mm, yeah, well said. Thank you. Found something else. You're welcome. I found something else we can kind of go into a closure with this, because I think it's the fundamental way in which we can understand what really the reality of us being here. And the, as I keep thinking about, the reality of what's going on inside is reflected outside, and it's not separate at all. And so we're talking about connectivity. So he says here, we are conditioned to think of all things as being separate, material, and decidedly non-conscious. I mean, this is how we were brought up. It's just the patterns that we were completely fit into so easily in all of these societies through roles and everything else that Ram Dass has talked about so much over the years. Treta Yuga man, on the other hand, knew himself to be an inextricable part of a decidedly conscious and fundamentally interconnected and non-material reality. In the same way that we are aware of the physical weather, Treta Yuga man, it should be the Treta Yuga man. We are going to go get a T-shirt. Treta Yuga man is where we want to be. Treta Yuga man was aware of the subtle weather of conscious forces flowing within and around him. Aware of the subtle weather of conscious forces flowing within and around him. Whether these were the thoughts and energies of a nearby person or the unique magnetic influence of a distant planet or field of stars. How cool is that? You know, it's amazing. So amazing. But it is. It's all about just connection, you know, connecting. And, you know, which is one of the things I feel fortunate to be involved in, the Love Serve Remember Foundation, which is the umbrella under which is this podcast network, Be Here Now Network. And to be able to do all of the things that we do that help people connect is one of the, I mean, I really am thankful to be able to be part of that. You've been part of it as well. We've done so many things together over the years. And yeah, so thanks really for bringing this up, because it does give a switch in perspective that allows one to maybe not be so terribly caught up in the moment. Grief is there because of what's going on in all parts of this world. But I think having some small spark of realizing that there is recompense around the corner, that it, and it can't be based on just this lifetime. Realizing, and you mentioned it before, the reality of what reincarnation is, which we have no idea, but we've seen it in broad daylight. That reality, as Jimi Hendrix said many years ago, there was an interview with him that a friend of mine did, and he said, yeah, reincarnation? What? Oh, what's the, heaven will get real overcrowded real quickly. I'm sure that there, he said, of course. Anyhow, getting a broader picture is helpful for sure of what reality is.
Yeah. And to get back to K.K. Shaw for a minute, when he used to bring up the word faith, you know. It was in the least sort of didactic way. It was just a quick tool to explain to me at any given moment, you know, when I was lucky enough to be in his presence, was you take faith, you eat it up, and then these things like believing or not believing in the yugas or all of this becomes irrelevant because you find something you do believe in, and then there's no arguing about it. That's faith. You love it. You know it exists within you. You know you recognize it. You're one with it. You flow with it. And so to get back to the yugas, as Raghu said, it does give you that sense of there is not so much a plan. It's not a plan. It's just a natural progression through various densities of consciousness.
That we interact with. It's not isolated. Yes. We are part of that, which is. And that's a difficult thing.
That's why, you know, we're living in a time when people who've had deep oppression into their ancestry, they can remember it, you know. And yet now, in one case, you know, a brilliant artist, Martin Scorsese, you know, doing a film about the Saudi tragedies and all of that. And I've seen some of it, and it's just incredibly, beautifully, marvelously done. And so here we are then in 2023, when an artist of great distinction and power of a sort decides to unearth a very dark time in many other dark times of Native American history and do it in such a way that people will breathe more about it and go, "Oh, I didn't know that." And it really is important. So that's Treta Yuga stuff. It really is, you know, because when I saw an interview with Scorsese, that's all he wanted to do is meet with them and go, well, did this happen and how did that happen? And is Leo DiCaprio really playing that correctly? Is that anything, you know, you brought them in. They were happy to do that. And then they brought about this movie, which is coming out next week, I think, which will.
Yeah, no, it's out. People told me they've seen it. It's a masterpiece.
Oh, they like it? Yeah. Great. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, me too.
And that's got nothing to do with any yugas, but I guess I brought it up because I have faith that there are people now within this time we all share who are determined to, if not raise the consciousness, at least to shift it a little bit. Mm. And that's very important, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
No, absolutely. And there are many people who are doing that. Not just people who are doing the opposite.
Yeah, if you're watching, this is the book, The Yugas, right?
It'll be in the show notes too. You'll be linked over to be able
to
get
good.
It.
And it's just to mention them again, because they did a great job, Joseph Selby and David Steinmetz.
Yeah, thank you guys for doing something as formidable and substantial, really.
Yeah, really.
And we will develop a t-shirt now called Treta Yuga Man.
It will happen. That. Don't think it. It'll suddenly happen. Yeah, right.
Think it. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for doing this. As usual, everybody, this is Mind Rolling on Be Here Now Network. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com. Put your name on the mailing list so you can see some of the offerings that we do both here and ramdas.org. We'll see you next week.